Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Season Keepers, the show where the only two people we recommend keeping for the season is us. My name's Matt, aka Clean Sheet Wipeout.
My name's James, aka PL Drug.
As you can see for those on the YouTube, we have a guest with us today. For those on the audio, Steve, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I guess. Well, otherwise there's no point me being here if I don't introduce myself. I'm Steve. You might know me, you might not know me. But I'm Steve Bird 1982 or 1982 on Twitter, and I'm here to talk about Newcastle. So that's going to depress everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess that's the primary aim of this podcast. We thought, you know, you're a good friend of the show and whatnot, and we've got a group chat going, got to know you kind of over the last year, really, haven't we? And we know that you're probably more depressed about Newcastle than we are about Saints, and that's quite difficult. So we thought we'd give you the stage to really chat about Newcastle, because it's not something that I've really heard on many podcasts. So I don't know about you, James, but have you got anywhere that you you want to start with Quiz and Steve?
Yeah, so I guess the ownership, obviously it's not ideal. Just talk us through exactly why he's hated as much as he is.
Well, I don't know where you can start at the beginning, I guess. The Keegan stuff has never sat well with anyone, has it? You know, he lied to Keegan, the Milner thing. And then, you know, you'll be surprised who we're going to get. And then I don't know if you guys have seen it recently, but it's quite well known that the idea was we were going to get Bastian Schweinsteiger to replace James Milner. That's a very good transfer, particularly back in, what was it, 2007, 2008? He said we put a bid in, obviously forgetting Keegan, would be, you know, German contacts from Hamburg. He rang up Rummenigge, said, do we put a bid in? He said, well, yeah, but it was 5 million. He just laughed at it. And then forgot about it. You know, 5 million for Bastian Schweinsteiger 3 years ago wouldn't have been accepted.
Nah.
From there, you get rid of Keegan, which, for reasons that I suppose legally I can say have been proven, because you got your payout. You know, just misinformation, Dennis Wise doing the transfers, Tony Jimenez, Ignacio Gonzalez, and that's only the first year he was there. You get Shearer come in, didn't have much time, got relegated, wanted the job, said he was going to have the job, never spoke to him again.
Madness, absolute madness.
We went down. To be fair, he bankrolled the club then, you know. He got players like Harwood in. They came back up. I think he did the right thing in getting rid of Houghton. Going on a bit of a tangent here. Pardew came in. I don't like the term Geordie Mafia, because it makes it out that we don't like, as Newcastle fans, we don't like Cockneys or anything like that. First of all, I'm married to one. Second of all, the outpouring of emotion when Glenn Roeder died clearly showed that that wasn't a thing. From there, we had the fifth place finish. Okay. Magnificent, that. We bought Vernon Anita. That was it. Nothing wrong with Vernon Anita. Liked him. Worked hard. But you're not going to maintain that level.
Nah.
So that comes to an end. John Carver. That was a bit of a nightmare. And Steve McLaren, let's not talk about that. Then we go down again. Somehow, along the way of that season, we get, you know, a Champions League winning manager, whose last games in charge before that was a manager of Real Madrid. So he comes along, Rafa, as you know. Wants to back the club, wants to stay there, gets us in a position, gets the team all set up. Yeah, no, you're not good enough for us either. Or, I don't want your expertise around. Not good enough is definitely not what they thought. And then just replaces him with the cheapest manager he can find.
Yeah. I think that's where it really sort of went rapidly downhill, was obviously Benitez going.
Yeah.
I think that was when anyone who had any semblance of thought that, you know what, maybe just circumstances, things like that, now is a time, you know, we can build a club. We never had a manager of Rafa's caliber since Bobby. And obviously that was pre, we didn't treat him well either, did we? Mm. But that was, obviously that was pre-Ashley. But when you've got it all set up, he's got a style of play that's starting to work. I think we, not to bring it up, lads, but that I think we absolutely hammered you, didn't you? 3-0 or something. A couple of games. It was a dead game. It was a dead game. I think Perez got a hat trick and Rondon battered everyone. And Almiron had settled. It wasn't brilliant. We weren't going to win the league. We weren't going to finish sixth. But there was a platform. And every time we've had a platform, he just seems to want to smash the platform down. And I don't know what the next step is because we've never taken it.
I just don't get it with Ashley. And obviously, you've had the ongoing kind of talks about selling the club and whatnot. And every time something gets to a point in the media of saying it's almost there, it seems to go dead. As a fan, I guess that must be pretty frustrating.
It is in the respect of, I don't know what I can legally can and can't say, not that I'm in the know or anything.
Say what you want, mate.
All right, cool. Saudi money's not good money. It's oil money. It's based on, you know, bad things, shall we say. But so is Man City's money. So is PSG's money. The Glazers don't use their own money. Nope. I don't think John Henry got that rich by being a saint. whilst I might be against the Saudi ownership, I might not, probably slightly against it based on their human rights and things like that. But that's a completely different argument. If someone wants to buy a football club and you can't, and the government of the time is in trade and everything negotiations with them, why the Premier League able to say you aren't a decent country? Now, I know that's not what they're saying. They're saying about ownership.
Yeah.
But if they can buy McLaren, or they're in talks to buy McLaren, they can own, a high percentage of Uber. Why can't they own a football club?
Mm. No, it's a fair point. I guess City is, the example there, isn't it?
And if someone comes out and says, this is why they can't buy this football club, and they say, look, we've made mistakes. We don't want people like that in the game anymore. We can't get the ones that are in out. You can't say it that way. Then fine, move on. Let him sell it to someone else. Or let him stay. So at least he doesn't want to stay, but at least he won't have the excuse of, well, why would I spend money on my team? I don't want it.
Mm.
So you literally, it's like a ghost ship. No one knows who's doing what. No one really seems to know who's involved in transfers. As in, I think the rumor is that in the last couple of days of the transfer, Steve Bruce was ringing up clubs trying to get people on loan.
He was, now, exactly.
Now, I'm pretty sure that no other club, even in the Championship, operates like that. I mean, I'm not even sure. I am a Gateshead fan as well, mainly as a byproduct of Newcastle being so depressing. Not that that tells me. But I don't even think Gateshead worked like that. I don't think Mike Williamson is sat on the phone ringing up players, trying to get them on loan. And they're a Conference North side. So you've got ongoing, and it's like the second time, of bullying or mistreatment of the youth team. No one knows who's in charge of the youth academy. It changes every 6 months. I think it was, I don't even know, someone came in recently. But it changes all the time. And there's no link between the youth academy and I guess it goes up to Lee Charnley. So there's no one between head of the academy and the guy who runs the club. Who oversees all of this? Who's scouting the youth kids? This guy, was it Munez who came in? Who's found him? Who said he's good? He might be the next Cristiano Ronaldo. He's probably not, but he could be. But no one's telling us who is telling these guys that he's good.
Nah.
That's all Rafa wanted. He wanted a scouting system. He didn't want Joe Linton. He wanted 40 million to spend 20 million on Rondon. He sold Perez. Well, they sold Perez for 30 million, which we used to buy St. Maximin. It's not Joe Linton's fault. He was bought to play in a position he wasn't asked to play. He's never played in his life. And then by the time he's now playing, his confidence is shot. You know, everyone's just, 40 million, you're a joke. He's obviously a very good footballer. I mean, not when I say very good, I mean he's better than us.
Well, yeah. To get to that level, he must be.
Yeah, you know, so he must have done something right to come out of Brazil. Was it Hoffenheim he went to? You know, that was a good front three they had. They were quite successful. He's not a bad footballer, but to ask him to play in a role he's never played for. Whose idea was it that would work? I mean, Ashley put his own money into that deal. Why not trust the guy who's won European Cups and managed Liverpool and Real Madrid? All right, Real Madrid didn't go too well. He managed, didn't that? You know, if he wants it to be a plaything, let it be a plaything and just say that so we can all get on with our lives.
No, I agree. I suppose, yeah, you've touched on it there, like the management side of the club. Obviously, we've just listened to your kind of opinions on ownership, and we could probably talk for hours on why deals haven't gone through and where Newcastle fans, I guess, want to see their club, because you're a big club. Like, you know, it's what, 50 odd. You are, like, historically, Newcastle are a big club. And, you know, you've got the ground, that ground on a full day is like a cauldron at times, but
It's also falling apart.
Yeah, you're not seeing that, but you've got the supporters there. It's just they don't back what is going on at the club at the moment. And, you know, we've seen that to an extent. You know, we went all the way down to League One. Suddenly we were getting 12,000 people at St. Mary's. Now, you know, back in the Premier League, yeah, funnily enough, all the supporters come flooding back again. But what's going on at our club in terms of ownership, I guess it's not similar, but we're not happy with the way it's been run either. So I do have sympathy for Newcastle fans because we don't understand what's going on at our club.
No, I mean, I'm not really too sure either. Until you guys had mentioned it to me, I didn't even realise, at least with ours, it's quite well publicised. I didn't realise there was an ownership issue at Southampton.
Yep.
It all, from the outside looking in, to recently, it looked like you had a plan. You had a business model that, okay, involved selling all your good players. But you did then reinvest. And you've done it, to be fair, you've done it with the Ings money.
Yeah.
You've reinvested it. Even if the ownership is still a bit suspect, you're not happy with what's going on, you've sold your best player, but you've tried to replace him.
Yeah.
So it is similar. But again, I'm not afraid with the thing. Is the guy trying to sell the club at Southampton?
I guess not actively, but the club is for sale. So we did a Saints podcast pre-season. If anybody hasn't listened to it, feel free to go back. But we spoke briefly about ownership there, and there were two unsuccessful bids to buy the club.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is going to sound terrible because it sounds like I'm defending Mike Ashley. I'm not. I think a lot of the Newcastle deals fell through because people didn't have the money.
Mm.
He wants his 300 million, which... is it worth it? Is it not? I mean, he sold off or leases some part of the land, and it's been sold, I think, to the University of Reading, of Newcastle. And so now we can't expand the stadium in certain areas. So that must lessen the value of it. But he wants his 300 million. And he's also always said, if you don't have 300 million to buy this football club in cash, how can you have the money to then fund it going on? Which, in a way, I've always defended him on. Because if that is his party line, it makes sense. You know, if you're going to have to pay 300 million over 6-year installments, you can't maintain the club in any way because you haven't got the finances. But if you want to sell it at some point, you've got to just sell it. Because you're saying that you're on off up for this, you're up for sale, but you're not publicly up for sale. Yeah. We've been in that situation since we got relegated the first time in, I think, 2009. We've been in that situation since then. So he's been looking to sell a club for 12 years. Now, surely at some point, someone must have had the money to buy that.
Yeah. I guess you'd think somebody did, but does that then mean that? Is this all just a publicity stunt from Ashley in terms of keeping his name popular and keeping Newcastle in the media? But to all purposes, he doesn't want to sell.
I don't know if he doesn't want to sell, but I think he likes his... It's not free anymore, is it? Because Sports Direct sort of pay us.
Mm.
But he likes his free advertising for his shop, or his shops, or his brand, I suppose. And obviously then we had the big thing that the club store is now Castor, but there's rumours that he's got a lot of financial investment in that. I listened to a podcast, probably just when the deal came out, with some Rangers guys from the Supporters Trust there, and they're still trying to get Ashley out of their club in some ways. He's still got financial holdings or some kind of control over something in Rangers.
Okay.
Or it may have just, or they may have just got rid of some kind of, but a lot of it they think is now through, you got back in the back door by investing in Castor. Again, I got no proof of that. So don't, you know, if you get sued, don't blame me.
I don't think anyone's going to sue the little old season keepers. So no, we might be right for a while.
It's just things that I've heard. And all together, you know, if you hear one thing, it's fine. But it's almost like, it's like support. I was saying the other day, it's like supporting two clubs. I've got the club that I love, I grew up with, that when I was a kid, there was Gascoigne. And then we went on to, we were a bit dodgy under Jim Smith, but then he had the Keegan years. And even, you know, we whinged about Dalglish and Hullet. We got to two cup finals, didn't turn up at them, but we got to two cup finals. We finished second, we were playing in Europe, and then we had Bobby, and we had the great years under that. And it's almost as if when Bobby Robson disappeared, when I say disappeared, he was badly tracked, as I've said before, it then kind of, the club ceased to exist there, went into a bit of torpor, I think that's the right word, and then Mike actually bought it because the Shepherds needed the money and we weren't in a good financial, and then it's just as if the club I support doesn't exist anymore. There's just a, as I say, an empty vessel that has the same badge that I remember wearing and loving as a kid. But it's just aimlessly, it's to the point that you don't even, I don't know what I support anymore.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it's something that we've spoken about privately, haven't we, before, that when it comes to Newcastle playing and whatnot, often it's not that you don't care, but you don't particularly feel that you've got as vested an interest as you used to have.
Yeah, it's apathy.
Mm.
You know, people, the passion for Newcastle is obviously, I mean, I've never done a podcast, and I'm on a podcast talking about Newcastle, so I obviously still have feelings and belief, but it feels like the club I'm talking about has nothing to do with the club that I love, and yet it's technically the same thing.
Yeah, well, funnily enough,
one day you get it back.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe. But when you've waited 13 years, you start thinking, is it gone?
Do you think it's potentially as well the way just football in general is sort of heading?
I think my views on, obviously not publicly, but obviously we've spoken about my views on the way football is pretty, I mean, you've got your glass ceiling, which might as well just be platinum and held down with all the money in the world, because unless you've got Saudi Arabian oil money, you're not going to get anywhere near. You know, you've got, look at Villa, West Ham, Everton, particularly West Ham and Everton. They've spent a lot of money.
Yep.
I mean, they're well-run clubs. And if you ask me what the ambition is a Newcastle fan is, to compete with those guys.
That's where you'd expect them to be, surely.
Well, if they're a well-run club and that's the direction they're going in, yeah. Now, I'm not saying that Newcastle had any chance of getting any of the players that Villa got, or Souček when he came over. Did they try?
Yeah, because these players are out there. Like, we've proven, you know.
Exactly.
We're not the biggest club in the world, but, you know, the likes of, say, Dusan Tadic and whatnot, they all came.
Oh, yeah.
Virgil van Dijk came from Celtic, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
You know, we found him. It's about having the right kind of scouting network in place, which you've already touched on, bringing those players in, because if you've not got the funds to spend, You have to be smart with your money.
Yes, and we aren't. We like to think we are, because we like to have this thing of the message recently is self-sustainable. Which, if that's the case, that's fine. Say that, but don't not speak to us for 2 years and then release a statement that doesn't make any sense to anyone. Oh, we bought Willock, but we bought him in installments, so that's a massive, massive. Well, then what happened to the rest of the money? You know, where's the Adam Armstrong money? Surely, from that, we've got £1 million to get Hamza Chowdhury on loan, yeah, who Leicester desperately wanted to give us. And I think the negotiations went on for as long as Leicester, I think, probably bent over backwards. And they wanted, look, we need something here. And we don't even have that. So if we've bought Willock, if it turns out that the accounts are that bad, and he's thinking, right, if the books go wrong, the sale won't go through, say it. And I think a lot of that is what a lot of Newcastle fans want, is just tell us what the plan is. But they don't. We've had a decade and a half nearly of silence.
It's mad. I suppose we could go on for hours on the ownership, but I think it's only right that we kind of maybe turn our attention towards the management that's in place. And for me, I think the key image in the last few weeks surrounding Newcastle was that still of I think it's your loss in the cup, wasn't it? Went to pens. You've got the team huddle, it's being held, and who's on the outside? It's Steve Bruce.
Yes. I don't know if that's how his management style is. I don't know, and I don't ever blame Steve Bruce for taking the job. If your manager is Sheffield Wednesday, no disrespect to Sheffield Wednesday, and even if you're not Steve Bruce, who, you know, Man United, Norwich, he obviously grew up supporting Newcastle, you wouldn't turn it down. He's taken the job. I don't doubt that he's trying his best. He spent a long time, I believe, listening to promises that weren't ever going to happen, and he spent all his time defending Mike Ashley. And I'd like to think that was him just delegating, but it probably wasn't. But it was more probably a manifestation of his, to go back and to quote Keegan, the regular quote, it wasn't exactly as it was advertised in the brochure. And I think at that point, he's realised that all of these things he said for Mike Ashley, I know he's going back to ownership, and I don't mean to, that it's not going to happen now. So what am I doing? What am I doing this for? I'm getting dog's abuse, which, you know, I'm not too sure I agree with, because he's still a person and he's still just doing a job that he's trying his best. His best is a bit strange. It's old school management, but if you employ an old school manager, that's what you're going to get. And I don't know if that was just a manifestation of what is the point of this now. So now I think he's gone on holiday this week, which says everything, doesn't it? You know, he's gone on holiday this week.
Mad.
He's come up, made a statement about the club that you know, that they haven't helped him, which they haven't. But I mentioned to you earlier, I sent you a screenshot. We played in 25 games last season. We played like 17 different formations. Over Christmas, we played 5 different right backs, 5 games in a row, and there wasn't one injury to a right back.
It screams of someone that is almost, it's not that he doesn't know what he's doing, because, you know, he's got to where he is being successful in management, but it almost screams of someone that doesn't know what to do with this club and is almost panicking to, I guess, appease the fans in a way, to, you know, kind of detract from the attention that he is getting, trying all these different formations to get a result. But if you continuously do that, you're never going to get any cohesion, are you?
Well, that's the thing. You know, a big issue that I have with him, and I know a lot of Newcastle fans do, is West Ham. West Ham got beat 3-0 off us first game of the season last season. They changed their tactics, then they got beat off Arsenal, and then they stuck to that tactic. As I say, as you know, Haley, I watch probably more West Ham than I do Newcastle now. It's less depressing. And they said Southampton, you've got beaten, I'm not to bring it up, but you've got beat 9-0 twice in two seasons.
It's only taken 23 minutes for that to get mentioned.
But at no point have you changed how you play to such an extent that it's a brand new formation. Hasan Hüttl has literally said, this is how we play. That happened. That wasn't good. That was, everything went wrong. But I still believe in the principles of how I want this team to play. And to be fair, you're not doing too bad.
So I guess the question leading on from what you've just said there is, how do you want Newcastle to play? Now, with the players that you've got, obviously, we can talk about FPL assets after this, but with the current squad setup, how do you see the best formation and the best tactical nous to get what you believe that squad should achieve this season?
Well, what should that squad achieve? I think they'll do well to get 20 points.
Wow.
I mean, people are probably laughing at me now. I just don't see where they win games. I mean, they've got match winners. Callum Wilson is a very good centre-forward. Yeah. He's a very good centre-forward. Willock is obviously a very great young talent.
We showed that at the end of last season, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. You've got... The problem is, we fell upon, at the end of last season, a way of playing, that a lot of dead games, but it worked. But we're playing wing-backs. If you want to play wing-backs, that's fine. But we spent, I don't know, 15, 20 million on Jamal Lewis? He's a left wing-back, right? Steve Bruce bought him. He now doesn't play him. He plays Matt Ritchie. And I like Matt Ritchie, but he's never, ever been a left wing-back. So he's gone and bought a £15 million left wing-back, who Liverpool wanted. They didn't buy him. They probably weren't going to buy him. They got the Greek. But Liverpool don't get linked publicly to bad footballers. And then we played this young lad, Lewis, and I remember him getting absolutely torn apart against Brighton when we got beat 3-0. But he played St Maximum in front of him and just told St Maximum to run around and do what he wanted. And he had Lamptey just going past him. And I can't remember who played wide right that day for Brighton. I mean, every time we play Brighton, you might as well just treble up on Brighton, triple captain Trossard and count the points. So we've got, I don't know where we play. We've got to play three at the back because that's all they know. I wouldn't have sold Lejeune. I know he's injury prone, but I think he's probably our best centre half. But he's not anymore because we've sold him. We're playing Jacob Murphy, who was a right winger at right wing back, and we're permanently getting caught out, as you did to us on four or five occasions a couple of Saturdays ago.
Gineppo should have put you to bed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know who put it on Twitter, but I remember reading it and saying, I've never conceded a last 96-minute penalty and thought, got away with that one for a draw. And it was that bad. I mean, I was actually in Southampton that weekend. And the Southampton fans that I spoke to couldn't believe they hadn't won.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah, and I was, and it didn't surprise me. How do we play? I don't, it's difficult. I would like to go back to play the way we did when Rafa left. Wilson up front, doing what Rondon does. Have St Maximin and Almiron, because Almiron sits in a midfielder, which completely nullifies everything he's got pace-wise, playing as a number 10. But to play those two as a pivot, and then if you want to sit there where Hayden and Longstaff or Shelby is at midfield two, that's five, isn't it? I've got five there.
Yep.
Yeah. And then you can play a back four if you want, because then you've got two guys holding, and that just rely on your front three. Have Willock in there with whoever. Willock broke forward. That worked. That was the last time I saw Newcastle work. And if you look at the end of last season, that's how we played as well. None of this weird stuff where we played Alan St. Maximin as a forward that much, even though he went on the left wing, the FPL have had to reclassify him as a striker. You know, we'd start games with Joe Linton and Gail up front, and Gail will be going out to the left. Dwight Gayle is many things. I don't know if he's a premiership class footballer, but if you're going to have him on the pitch, put him in the box. So whilst that's a good question, I haven't really answered it. I think it says a lot about
About Newcastle, yeah, exactly.
I would pick that system, but the problem with that system is you'd pick it, and then Callum Wilson will go and do his hamstring for 3 months.
Mm. Yeah, without obviously those two, Sam Maximin and Callum Wilson, obviously we saw it last season, you're very light.
Yeah.
You need obviously more depth, one or two extra players. I mean, credit to Steve Bruce, though. You could bring Callum Wilson in. I think he might have even signed Sam Maximin as well. Yeah. So
he has
done some good decisions.
He has. And, you know, I don't really dislike the Ryan Fraser signing. It hasn't worked, but it's not a bad signing.
No, particularly we saw the partnership that Wilson and Fraser had at Bournemouth. Yeah. Now, imagine if that had been replicated in Newcastle.
Yeah, and you know, there's no reason that it might not. But bringing Ryan Fraser on with 7 minutes to go and playing him in centre midfield is not going to conjure up a relationship with Callum Wilson again.
No. Not at all.
So I don't really know. It's the same as everything else. And it's kind of quite depressing. I don't know where Newcastle go, and I don't think anyone knows where Newcastle go. And if Wilson and St Maximum get injured for any period of time, where do we create? We don't create with them that much. And now we're conceding pretty basic chances. And I know people are going to say, it's only three games, don't panic. But it's not three games. It's two seasons and three games under one manager. Mm. Surely after that many games, I mean, yes, okay, I'm sat here and I've watched them for the same period of time, but surely he must know how he wants to play, and he's got his players now. And they're still trying to play the same way that they did under Rafa.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I mean, on our SkyPod last week, James saw a particularly amusing stat. I think it was it Miguel Almiron had the most tackles for your team against us last week. Surely Almiron shouldn't be in a position where he's having to make that many tackles.
No, he shouldn't. I mean, to be fair, I like Almiron. He works very hard and he does get back. But then he's getting the ball from 20 yards outside his own box. Mm. That's not his game. I remember him, again, the last time there was any real belief was with Rafa. He was running... Well, a couple of times last year, he played number 10 and he was all right. He was running in past people. He was causing problems. Now, if he doesn't like his central midfield, he should do something about it. But then you go back to, did he try and do something about it? And he didn't get backed.
Yeah.
Because we've been linked with Hamza Choudhury. But then you could say, well, you just spent 25 million on a central midfielder. Why do you need another one? Because the squad's weak. It's awful. You know, we used to have six decent centre-halves. We've probably got two and a half. You know, Fernandez is getting old. I like Shaw.
Yep.
All he's going now is, you know, because he's a good passer of the ball, against Southampton, and against West Ham, we didn't play against West Ham, sorry, but against Southampton, they were giving him the ball, and he was trying to pass the ball 70 yards as a maximum. So, that's never going to work. I mean, okay, you can say it probably did.
Yeah.
It didn't.
It's always going to work against our defence, mate.
Yeah, it's not sustainable, I think is what I'm saying.
No, I can't imagine a tactic like that would work against, say, United this weekend. And we'll come on to that fixture shortly.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah. I imagine so. Well, I suppose, kind of touching on that then, you know, this is an FPL podcast after all. So, it's only right, I guess, we get your opinions on Newcastle in terms of fantasy Premier League assets. And are you likely to want to get the likes of, say, Maximin, Callum Wilson into your team? Or are they just not worth it at the moment?
There's just nothing. It's just the FPL situation just sums up everything. It's just bleak. It's just... What's Wilson? Seven million? 7.5 million?
Seven and a half, yeah.
7.5. Look at the players you can get. You can get Adam Armstrong for 6 million.
Yeah.
You can get Ivan Toney for 6 million. Yeah, Wilson, if you keep him in, Wilson will get you a certain amount of points. But not as many points as if you get Ings for a million pound more. He's playing for a team that's going to create him chances. He's not going to play all the time. And outside of that, if Jacob Murphy was 4.5 million, maybe I'd try and convince you that maybe because he's playing, he's going to get some assists. But
I think he might actually be 4 million, 4.0.
Oh, that's Manquillo, isn't it?
Well, so, yeah, so somebody for Newcastle is 4.0.
Yeah, Manquillo. If Manquillo comes in the team, he's probably worth it to sit on your bench for when we play. But then again, who are we going to keep a clean sheet against?
That's a bold question.
And the fact that I can sit here and no one's going, oh, well, come on, you've got to keep a clean sheet against someone. It says quite a lot.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, if you're on wildcard this week, just get 3 Man United players in.
Because you could go the other way and just target Newcastle.
I do that a lot. It's to my eternal shame. It tends to work, sadly. Except when I do it and I captain someone against Newcastle, we put in a dogged defensive performance and lose 1-0, and my guy gets booked. But
To be fair, I think you've kind of led it quite nicely on, because you told us at the beginning of this podcast before we went live, and obviously it's only right we get into a bit of FPL and in game week 4 before we finish up. You've told us that you are on wildcard. So
I am on wildcard, yeah.
Neither myself nor James are on wildcard, and the talk amongst the community is do you or don't you? So it's great that we've got someone on the pod that is going that way. So do you want to maybe go into a bit of detail as to what pushed you that way and perhaps give us a rundown of some of the players that you're picking and the reasons why?
Well, I'm that way because my start was awful. I got 197 points. I started off all right game week 1. And my intention was always to have Trent and Robertson all season. I did last year and it worked out all right. And I wanted to go back that way. So the intention was as soon as Robertson came back, I was going to wildcard, because it's very difficult to manoeuvre up to a £7 million defender. Currently, I was going to go with Ronaldo and Lukaku, because fantasy champ man style, I just like to have big, expensive strikers. but now there's doubts over both of them. I don't know what to do with that.
Don't trust the doubts about Ronaldo.
I don't. Ronaldo's going to turn up.
The story came from the Sun. Right.
I did it. Oh, for that. Well, Ronaldo, even if Ronaldo starts on the bench, he's going to have 25 minutes against Matt Ritchie. So as much as I love Matt Ritchie, that's fine. But I don't know whether to not bother, because I'm looking at going along the middle, the mid-price midfielders. I want Havertz. And I want him now, because at 8.3, I think he's a deal.
Yeah.
James sold him. Well,
yeah, and he scored.
No, that happens all the time. You know, that's standard, isn't it? So I think at 8.3 is good. I'd like Grealish, because I think he's going to play a lot. I've looked at it. I was never Jack Grealish's biggest fan, but I watched him more against England, against Hungary, and I watched him a couple of times for City, and I think he looks different. I think he's more forward. But he wasn't for Villa, so I'm not going to get into that. But I just think he looks like he's going to get a lot of points for an £8 million. Torres is someone that I don't know whether to go for Torres or Jesus. Because if I go for Jesus, I won't have Lukaku. But I could jump from Ronaldo to Lukaku when the fixtures turn, because I've got Havertz. And I could have Salah instead of Jota in the middle.
Personally, I'd be going Torres over Jesus, solely because of that saving. And I think at the moment, Torres has obviously shown his value. I mean, he got 18 points last game week.
Who would you put up? I don't know who to put up front then instead of Lukaku.
I guess it's whether you want Lukaku now or whether you wanted Lukaku in game week 7. Exactly. Because
I think that might be the best bet.
Yeah, because it gives you a bit more scope to target, you know, some of these mid to high priced forwards.
Yeah.
But giving yourself a bit of value in that squad.
Yeah, because, you know, I didn't. Again, it's the hope that kills you, isn't it? I didn't go Benrahma and Antonio first game of the season because I was like, do you know what? I've got to have a bit of hope, and I can't put them both in. And then, obviously, I should have done. So,
yeah, I think I'm the only one out of the three of us that did, to be fair. And I got lucky. I didn't like that pick to start with, but I couldn't get away from their price. The fact that,
that makes
Ben Rama was, 6.5, Antonio was 7.5. I couldn't turn that down, and it allowed me to build a better squad.
I went the wrong way. I started with Suchek, and it was between him and Fornals, because I really rate Fornals as a footballer, and I probably should have gone Fornals. But, you know, that's a good midfield West Ham I got for 18.5 million in that game.
It's not bad at all, is it?
Not bad, is it? But at the back, I'm going to go Trent, Diaz. I might take a punt on Christensen. Obviously, Liveramento is at 4.0. I think we all got him at 4.0 in the end. He's a great price. And probably just Ben White's still there. They're Connor Cody. I'm going to go with Connor Cody at the back.
Okay, yeah. No, Wolves' fixtures look good, to be fair.
I'd like Jimenez up front, but I just don't think I've not seen enough of Wolves going forward.
Agreed, yeah. I mean, they've had their chances in the last 3 weeks. Me and James have spoken at length about them in the last 2-3 pods. But for me, Jimenez always feels like a one-goal man.
Yeah, you don't think he's ever going to get a hat-trick?
No.
You wouldn't have a captain him, would you? And I think there's people more at his price range that you could captain.
Yeah, I mean, he sits alongside the likes of Ings, Bamford, Antonio in terms of price points. Right. So.
Yeah, and, you know, in a couple of weeks, Bamford's got Newcastle. A couple of Fridays' time, so... now there's a captaincy.
I'll hold you on that one.
Well, if I have him, I probably will captain him. I'd probably go with Ronaldo, not bother with Lukaku, maybe go with... I don't want to get... I've got this thing. It's a bit silly, I guess. If I put Antonio in, I'm not going to gain from him now because everyone's got him. I'd only be trying to maintain that, you know, try and fend them off with fear of missing out.
Yeah, FOMO. But FOMO. On the other side of that, if you don't go with him and he repeats what he's done in the last three game weeks, in the next three game weeks, you're only going to fall further behind.
But, yeah.
I feel the same as Steve. Like, I just don't want to go there now that I've missed the boat.
that's exactly it. I see. Have I disappeared?
You have, yeah, we've lost you, but carry on.
Oh, yeah, you're getting darker, but now this is something else.
Yeah, you've just turned the lights out, mate.
Weird. Have I? Oh, well, that's weird, because I don't know what's happened there. Sorry about that.
No problem, carry on for the audio. It's all right.
Okay. Hang on, is that back?
Yes.
There you go. Well, what happened there is the light. I need to turn the light on. Sorry, does that happen on every podcast? It's very professional. I did notice it was getting dark. So
did we.
I don't know whether... No, I think I'll go without Antonio. And if I have to feel the pain, I'll feel the pain, because I could bring him in and he could go past one of your defenders and his hamstring goes.
Yep, that's fair. It's fair.
I mean, obviously, you know, if you've got him earlier than that, his value's gone up. You can just drop back down to one of the others around him.
Yeah.
But I won't have that option. It's probably the main way of thinking about that.
Yeah, he's potentially going up to 8 this week. So, I mean, 0.5 million in the first three game weeks.
Well, he's been very good.
He has. I suppose, you know, the best way to end the pod, I kind of thought about doing four predictions across the board for the three of us.
Okay.
And I've picked four fixtures. So first things first, that Crystal Palace 12:30 kickoff against Spurs. Where do we see it? We'll start with the guest, Steve.
Ooh. I don't. It's at Palace, isn't it? Palace are going to keep a lot of the ball. But I think Nuno's got them set up really well. But no defensive Sun player. I think Spurs will keep it up. I think they'll win 1-0 again. Fourth 1-0 win in a row.
Yeah, that seems fair. James?
2-1 Spurs.
Okay. I'm going to go Spurs keeping a clean sheet, but I'm going to go 2-0 Spurs. I think Harry Kane's going to turn up this time. Second fixture, I think it could be a brilliant game. Looking at Leicester at Man City.
City are on fire, aren't they? And Leicester, I think City got enough about them to come back from the international break without any problems. I think City will probably win 3-1, but Vardy will get another one. Just always scores, doesn't he?
James?
I'm going to say 1-1. I think it's going to be a tight game.
Okay. I had written down exactly the same score as Steve. I've gone 3-1. I just think City are going to find Leicester out defensively this time around. Third game, I thought it's only fair, seeing as there's two Saints fans on here. We touch on Southampton West Ham.
Oh, I'm going to get in trouble here. I think Southampton will win 2-1.
Ah, that's what I would like to hear, Steve. Sorry, Haley. James?
I think we're going to lose 1-0.
I'm going to say 2-2. Going to go for the old Desmond. And then finally, seeing as we got you on here, Steve, potentially Cristiano Ronaldo's re-debut at a full capacity Old Trafford against Newcastle.
Well, the full capacity is not going to make much difference. It'll sound the same, won't it? Every time we've played against Ronaldo in my living memory, we've got absolutely battered. Six nil.
Wow.
And Steve Bruce won't be there at the end of the week.
Wow.
Well, if that happens, I'll buy you a crate of beer.
If that happens, I'll probably be quite depressed. So I'll need one.
So you'll need the crate of beer.
Yeah.
Wow. James?
I'm going to halve that. 3-0 United.
I'm going to add one. I'm going to say 4-0 United. And I reckon Ronaldo will get a couple, Greenwood, and there'll probably be a really random Fred goal again.
Well, there'll be a penalty, won't there? Because we've given away three penalties in three games. So yeah. There's one of Ronaldo's goals.
Exactly. Well, we'll get to find out whether Ronaldo or Bruno takes it then, won't we?
Probably mix it all up and Greenwood will take it just to confuse everyone FPL style. It'll be the fifth goal in six and he'll just do it to wind everyone up.
He will, exactly. Well, really appreciate you coming on there, Steve, because I mean your Newcastle knowledge and I guess your passion behind the club at least is second to none, and it's been brilliant to talk to someone about Newcastle, because I mean I don't know many people that know this, but James used to be a Newcastle fan back in the day.
I was going to keep that quiet, but apparently you've decided to bring it up.
Oh, yeah, I have, yeah. When James was a boy, he was a Newcastle fan, and I remember him turning up to school and basically changing allegiance. He went from black and white stripes to red and white stripes.
What any particular reason for that?
Just wanting to watch my team. So like obviously I've seen a few Newcastle games. I saw, funny enough, I was in the away end for Newcastle against Saints.
You were, yeah.
Yeah, it was just too difficult to get up to the northeast. So yeah. And with it being my hometown where I was born, I just wanted to change allegiance, I guess, for all my family support Saints.
Well, you didn't really change allegiance, you just changed back.
Yeah,
if anything.
Yeah, so that makes sense. So why did you support Newcastle then to begin with?
Really liked Shearer as a kid, so I started watching England play. And yeah. It was like sort of around 96, 97, 98 when I was getting into football. And obviously Newcastle were quite a good team then.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember crying when we went out to Partizan Belgrade on a penalty shootout.
Yeah, thanks for that. That was the beginning of the end. That was, yes, I remember that. I was in Nottingham. And I was at uni. Yeah, we lost that. And I think it was only a few games later that Robson got sacked.
Yeah, that was...
It might have been, I think it was.
How you remember games and points in history that far back? Honestly, I can't remember last week, let alone going that far.
Very old.
Even so. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Steve.
It's been very enjoyable. I've never done anything like this. So, yeah, thanks. I haven't rambled on too much and
I hope for the listeners, obviously, it's something a bit different. We don't often do specials like this, but we thought it's only right during an international break. You know, they can be a bit boring. So we thought we'd give them something different. And I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation.
You know, thanks for giving us a bit of, airtime to talk about Newcastle. We don't really do much of it because, well, it kind of, if you're on the outside looking in, it looks like we're a group of people who have this delusion of of what we think we are. What all we really want is a football club that has a direction.
I think that's the perfect statement to end the pod, mate. So for those that want to give you a follow, do you want to just give them your Twitter handle?
SteveBird1982. You can follow me. I basically spend most of my time going on about how brilliant Joe Linton is. So if you like that kind of thing, follow me. If you don't, then, well, no Joe Linton for you.
Well, exactly. There you go. Right. Well, as always, James, I think that's a goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Cheers, guys.